we all have many different decision points in our life, and there's a few that you can look back on and you're like, that was a big decision. I may not have even known it at the time, but it ended up being a big decision. I asked my buddy, would you like to go for a long bike ride? And we ended up quitting our jobs for multiple weeks and going biking around Iceland. And my dad thought I was very foolish. My dad worked at Boeing for 35 years, and this whole quit your job to travel thing when you're 30-something years old doesn't make a lot of sense. And I quit my job, but then I pursued photography in the meantime. That ended up leading me to get better at public presentations and doing slideshows, and that actually got me connected with Art Wolf and eventually hired me. So if I did not go on that trip, I would not be here in this interview with you right now.
Welcome to the We Are Photographers podcast from Creative Live. I'm your host, Kenna Klosterman, bringing you true stories from behind the lens and behind the lives of your favorite photographers, filmmakers, and creative industry game changers. From their struggles to their wins, we get the real human stories about why they do what they do. I believe there is something to learn from everyone's story. If you're ready to join us in the hustle, listen, get inspired, and discover why, in the end, the creative journey is all worth it. My guest this week is John Gringo. John is a travel, landscape, and wildlife photographer. He's one of the most prolific educators on Creative Live, best known for his must-see Fundamentals of Photography class. He's the author of two books, including The Enthusiast's Guide to Exposure and 50 Things Photographers Need to Know About Focus. John leads photography tours globally to destinations such as Kenya, Tanzania, Cuba, Morocco, Jordan, Antarctica, and more to come. In fact, John and I lead many of those tours together as a team. In this episode, John describes those epic moments, both exciting and scary, photographing in remote corners of the world, including while working on the TV show Travels to the Edge. He shares life lessons learned as a professional foosball player, and he claims to be the only person to play foosball on all 7 continents. We talk about what it means to win at photography and what he loves most about preparing his world-renowned presentations for his classes that make learning both easy and fun. This is We Are Photographers with John Gringo, and this is his story. Let's start out with the fact that you studied photojournalism in college. Can you describe a memorable image that you saw, whether that was in high school or earlier, where you said to yourself, this is what I want to study, this is what I want to do as a career?
Well, I had a dorm room in college that was very visual. I was lucky enough to have my own dorm room, and I took the closets and I covered them with black and red crepe paper, and then I broke them into boxes, and each box was a different area of my life. And so I had like a box that was running inspiration, and I had another box that was photography and cameras, and then I had another box, which I don't know, was another other things, but I had like 3 or 4 boxes that were just on photography. And one image was, it wasn't so much the image, it was the image of the photographers. There was 2 National Geographic photographers, and they're in the desert and the wind's blowing and they're on this little sand dune and they've got these long lenses. And I'm like, that's what I want to do at some point. And I did end up doing that several times now.
So many people have that dream of, you know, that image of, I want to be a National Geographic photographer, or I want to be out there. Can you actually describe one of these moments? I mean, I've seen you out there in the field in the Sahara, and describe for me what that actually felt like to be there and getting images.
I guess the story is that I was with Art Wolf and the TV crew Travels to the Edge. We were in Madagascar, and Art happened to be sick one day, and it's his show, and I couldn't exactly fill in for him, but the crew needed to go out and shoot. And so I went out with the TV crew, and we were just bushwhacking through the wilds in Madagascar looking for lemur. And, you know, I'm got the 500 millimeter lens because Art's not there at that moment. And, you know, we're you know, getting stuff done. We're working for the show. And, you know, every once in a while, I might just have to stop, like, look where I am and what I'm doing. And I kind of feel like, well, you know, there's a lot of things that led up to this, and I just didn't happen to end up here. There was a lot of things that, you know, planned, unplanned, lucky, that put me there. And it just felt very fulfilling at that time, you might say.
So tell me about Travels to the Edge then, and how you got what is a dream job.
Yeah, at the time, I remember trying to call into a radio station who was asking, do you think you have a dream job? And I'm like, I got the best. And, you know, for someone who was working in a camera store, being able to get out in the field, which is where I've always wanted to be, it was a dream come true. It's a blip in my history now, because it was a really short period of time. It was only about 18 months, 2 years. And Art was doing a TV show for PBS called Travels to the Edge. And we went to India and Antarctica, and we went on safari in Africa, and went up to the bears in Alaska, and went to Bhutan and all these great places. And I got, you know, a hands-on look with, you know, one of the world's greatest photographers in travel photography with cultures and wildlife. And it was like, this is what I'm meant to do. I do something different than that now, but it felt really good.
So how did that shape what you do today? What are the other things that you do?
Well, working with Art for a couple of years, I've frequently said I've learned more in those 2 years than I did in 4 or 5 years of college. And so it kind of really set the tone for, okay, this is the way the real world works, at least one version of the world, because I've learned that every photographer who ends up being successful has taken a path that nobody else can take. And so I've seen some people try to emulate other photographers going, well, they photographed at this park, and they opened up this type of business, and they had this type of studio with this type of business plan. And photography is just all over the map. And any sort of plan that works for one person is probably not going to work for someone else.
You obviously had to sort of take a leap at some point. What has been the most worthwhile risk that you've taken in your life?
We all have many different decision points in our life. And there's a few that you can look back on and you're like, that was a big decision. I may not have even known it at the time, but it ended up being a big decision. And this would probably be 1996. I asked my buddy, would you like to go for a long bike ride? And my idea was 5 days around the Pacific Northwest. And he said, well, let's ride across the United States of America. And then that decided, well, you know, a lot of people do that. Let's do something else interesting. The long story the short version of the long story is that we ended up quitting our jobs for multiple weeks, taking a leave of absence and going biking around Iceland. And my dad thought I was very foolish. My dad worked at Boeing for 35 years, you know, one company his whole life. And this whole quit your job to travel thing when you're 30 something years old doesn't make a lot of sense. And I quit my job, but then I pursued photography in the meantime. That ended up leading me to get better at public presentations and doing slideshows. And that actually got me connected with Art Wolf, who then saw what I did and eventually hired me for that. So if I did not go on that trip, I would not be here in this interview with you right now.
How many countries have you been to?
I think it, of course, depends on what you consider a country, because I've been to some places that aren't countries, and I've been to some countries that are now two countries or something. But I think the number is right around 50.
You know, some people never leave the country that they live in.
I don't know how they do that. They say half Americans don't have a passport. Wow.
What have you learned about humanity or the world, seeing so many people and experiencing so many different cultures?
I'm really, really, really lucky. And in general, if you're listening to this podcast, chances are you're really, really, really lucky just to be able to listen to this podcast. After just a short bit of traveling, I was trying to think, you know, as far as on a scale of 0 to 100, you know, how good do you have it, you know, your lifestyle and everything else. And I think the 50% mark is if you have running water and electricity. And so if you have that, you're above the top half. And I was trying to figure out, like, where am I? Am I at the 85 or 86 or 87? And what am I going to do to try to get to 89? And am I going to sacrifice 10 years of my life so I can make my life 1% better? And so early on when I was traveling, I just gained a little bit more of a laid back attitude. And I found that, you know, a lot of people in the United States for vacation, they'll go to Las Vegas and they'll stay in a nice hotel and they'll go to nice restaurants. And then they come home and they look, oh, this is where I live. It's a dump and I don't have nice food and things aren't good. And when I've gone on vacation, I've stayed in, you know, some very poor places and they're hard beds and they don't have good food. And I come home and my meager little house, this is my castle. Oh my gosh, look at this running water. It's hot, it's cold, it's hot, it's cold. It's fantastic. And so I feel very satisfied with where I am and where I've been lucky enough to have been born in a great place at a great time.
How has that perspective on the world when you're out there traveling changed your day-to-day life, again, when you're here?
Right. Well, one of my big struggles that I still continue to struggle with is trying to feel a sense of peace and happiness exactly where I am. But if you do that, you're not going to get ahead and succeed. So those who are very successful are people who are not satisfied with where they are. They're not satisfied with who they are right now. So they got to strive for more, and they're never happy now because it's always better down the road. And so I want to be happy, but I also want to succeed. And so balancing happiness in the moment with success and happiness down the road, I think, is a really tricky thing, because you have people kind of yelling at you in both directions. You know, be the best person you can be, go out there and work hard every day and, you know, strive for more. And it's like, well, what if I'm happy now? And so I think trying to find that balance is really hard. And so you should definitely try to find happiness in who you are and where you are right now. So for instance, I'm getting married real soon, okay? But, you know, over the last 10, 20, 30 years, I've been single and I've not been married. And I've looked at friends who are married, and it's kind of like, well, they have something good, but you know what? There's good things about being single as well. So I'm not gonna, you know, go into self-pity about not being married and being with somebody. I'm just like, hey, I'm single, I can go on vacation. I'm gonna take advantage of this. And now I'm gonna get to, you know, go on the reverse side of that. Like, hey, I'm married, I can go to somebody with a play and go out to dinner tonight. And so we all have advantages of where we are, and it's a matter of taking advantage of them. And part of me for being happy and just trying to get it in the balance is for striving something better. So I always have projects I'm working on and things I'm looking forward to. And I'm not telling myself I can't be happy till I achieve that, but I will be happy if I achieve it, but I'll also be happy otherwise.
What is the definition of success to you today? And how does that differ from what success you thought success was when you were out there with Art Wolf many years ago?
Now, success is a weird thing, especially in the world of photography, because you could define it from your income that you make from photography. And in that sense, I've been pretty successful, more successful than I'd say the average photographer, but I'm sure there's many others who are doing much, much, much better than I am. There's success with your photographs and how they're received, and how my photos are used are a little bit different than most, but I think they've been relatively well received for what they do. And so that's a certain level of success. And then it's just a matter of, I think, you know, what projects did I choose to do, and did I do them and complete them in a way that I am satisfied and happy with? And that's one of the things that I've liked about working with Creative Live, is that they haven't put any pressure on me on when things need to be done or how they need to be done. They said very early on, after they saw some work, they said, John, if you're happy with it, we're happy with it. And so, you know, I schedule things out there so that I can really work on them as much as I want to, so that I can put it out there and say, this is my best foot forward.
Can you give us a story behind the most recent image that you created, where you just felt like you were jumping for joy about the experience and the image that you created?
Oh, okay. So the most excited I was probably back in Mongolia. I was traveling with a fellow traveler who I'd been with to Cuba before, and we were in the Gobi Desert. And as part of the tour that we had packaged, that we had put together, we had asked to photograph some camels in the morning. And so we had met this camel herder, husband and wife, and they were going to bring a bunch of camels out to the desert. And I'm kind of freaking out because I don't know where we can go. I don't know what the sand dunes are going to look like. I was not able to scout it out ahead of time. We're getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning. It's dark and everyone's looking at me going, okay, John, where do you want us to go? Where do you want to be? What do you want us to do? And it's like, okay, well, let me think. Let's just walk for 100 yards and let me see if there's a hill here. Okay, this is the ridge line. This is where the sun's coming up. And it's one of those things that the compass is spinning back and forth between success and failure very, very quickly as you turn around trying to figure out, you know, what you need to do. And, you know, I got us situated. I got them situated. I gave them some instructions and it started working out. And then it started looking really good. And then the light was nice. And then, oh my gosh, I'm getting so excited. And I am just shooting like crazy. And I ended up shooting about 1,000 photographs in 45 minutes. The camera was just reeling off. And that's, it's not because I'm a terrible photographer and I'm trying to make up for, you know, lousy shooting, I'll shoot enough to get good shots. The thing is when you're photographing camels, their legs are moving and I don't like, I'm sorry, I don't mean to be mean. I just don't like three-legged camels. I like four legs on my camels. So I shoot with the motor drive so that I can get all those bits and moments. And the sun came up and we got some just fantastic stuff. And it was a lot of fun.
What is one of the scariest scenarios that you've had in terms of photographing out there? Where in the world were you and what was it like?
Scariest image. Okay, so we'll go back a bit to working on Travels to the Edge. And we were in Ethiopia photographing and filming a stick fight, basically. And so these clans would get together and it was kind of all in good fun, but they would have these very serious stick fights and they would have these homemade brew, shall we say, that amped the entire situation up to a little bit higher level. And you were seeing some things that looked like they hurt quite a bit. You were seeing people get a little bit rowdy and you're kind of wondering, is this normal? Should I be concerned? Why is my guide running over to me right now? And they ended up rushing us out of there and like, get in the van right now. And it felt like the president, you know, get in the van right now. We're jumping in. We're going, you know, evacuating a situation. It's like, should I have been more scared or less scared or how should I have felt? And, you know, sometimes when you're traveling in foreign cultures, there are things that are different, obviously. It's just that you don't know how different they are from normal. It might be their normal or that might be a really unusual situation for them. And so that's obviously one of the things that's exciting about travel.
Okay, let's talk about John outside of photography, outside of teaching. I happen to know that you are a professional foosball player.
Most people don't even believe what you're talking or even know what you're talking about right now.
Okay, so what is foosball, and what is your dream in terms of foosball?
So in case you don't know what foosball is, it is table soccer. It's those little fake men, and so I play with dolls. No, it's a really fun game, and it's something that I excelled at a very early age, and it's something that I found very fair because I, as a little 10-year-old boy, could compete against my brother's 18-year-old friends and anybody else who stood up to the table. You just grab the handles and see who's the best. And so it was a very fair thing that I thought I could compete with other people on. And so it's something I played through high school and college. They had it in the dorm I was at, and then I ended up playing in bars, which have weekly tournaments, and then there's regional tournaments in the area, and then they have tournaments down in Las Vegas and other cities, and I've been to a number of those. I've been to the World Championships and National Championships and competed against some of the best players in the world, and the best players in the world are scary good because, like, an average person, like, just say your average bloke who goes to the bar and plays darts and pool and foosball, if he was to play me in foosball, he probably couldn't get a single point in. But if I played the best in the world, I could barely get a point in. You know, even though I know a lot of skills and how to do things, there's just huge differences in levels.
Is there anything about foosball that you have learned from doing it all these years that you've applied to, whether it's photography or life in general?
Well, yeah, there is. So let me explain in foosball just a little bit so you understand what's going on. When you serve the ball, it starts in the middle of the table and it's on your five bar because there's five men. And if you're bad, you just try to whack at the ball and hit it in the goal. But if you're good, you try to pass it up to your forward three bar, which has three players on it. So you're trying to get it through their five bar. And what you do is you do a number of tricks. You bounce it back and forth. You go off the wall. You do a fake. You do a little juke. And then you pass it through. And you get it up to your three bar. And then you can take a good concerted shot on the goal. And every time you go to the five bar, well, your opponent starts learning about what your moves are. And if you've only got one trick, they're going to adjust their game. And they're going to start blocking you. So you better have a few different moves to be successful. And what's going to happen is no matter how good you are, they're going to catch on to what you're doing. And you have to make an adjustment. And it's this adjustment where you were doing something and it was totally successful, but now it is no longer successful. So you need to figure out how to make it successful again. And you don't need to reinvent the wheel to do this. You just need to make a little bit of a change to accommodate for their adjustment. And so, you know, I learned, well, normally I bounce it against the wall twice, but now I'm going to do it three times, or I'm going to do it one time, or I'm going to throw a little extra fake into it. And so this adjustment, it doesn't mean that you've totally failed because it's now no longer working. You just need to figure out that small little adjustment to make whatever it is you're doing work again. And I think that works on a lot of things, especially in photography and models of business. And, you know, this is how I make my income. I do this type of photography. Well, that's not going to work forever. So you better figure out how to transition and adjust that to something else. And so the adjustment, it is something we all need to do and just be prepared for going with the flow and doing whatever it takes to make it work out.
How many continents have you played foosball in?
Well, I started in North America and I took a trip down to South America and I played, and then I ended up playing over in Europe. And so I thought, well, maybe I could play on all the continents, because when I was working on Travels to the Edge, we played in Antarctica and there was a Argentina base and they had a table down there and I found someone to play with down there. And so as far as I know, I believe I'm the first person in the world to play foosball on all seven continents, because I played in Australia and Asia now. And so I've got all the continents in, and I'm telling you, you're going to be hard pressed to find anyone that has played foosball on all seven continents.
That's amazing. What has your ranking been in the world?
Well, I'm currently ranked professional, but I believe they changed the ranking recently. I think there's still pro master, and there might even be like an elite level that three or four players aren't above that. And so there's usually rookie, and then there's like an intermediate level, and then I've passed beyond that. And to get beyond that either takes kind of a full-time 40-hour-a-week practice session, or a just natural skill set ability. And I'm reasonably talented at it, you might say. And I worked pretty hard, but some of the people that are at the top of the game are just so scary good. It's just so fun to think they're kind of, you know, like Olympic athletes, and you know how good different levels are versus the next, because the next level up is like 10 times better than you. And the next level above them is 10 times better. And so I think it's, you know, something that has influenced the other part of my life, and that there's always room for improvement. And no matter how good you think you are, there are people out there that'll kick your butt in whatever it is you're doing.
What is it about teaching photography, guiding people on tours all around the world? What is it about that that excites you the most?
Well, I would say that I think they're kind of different, the teaching and the tours. And when it comes to the teaching, this is going to sound maybe a little bit bad, but the actual instruction, the presentation of the class is not quite an afterthought, but I just put so much time and effort in the preparation materials. That's kind of what I like, just because I can toil away in my office and I can spend weeks and weeks. And it's a puzzle of sorts. I'm just trying to figure out what is the easiest way to explain X. And, okay, do I need these graphics? Do I need to put these words on screen? Can I tell this story to do it? And so it's more the formation of the plan. And by the time it comes to, you know, actually present the class, whether it's, you know, online or video or in-person type class, that's actually come pretty naturally to me. And it's been pretty easy. And so that's, you know, where I'm very thankful about some of the public speaking background that I have, which is, I think, a great skill set. If you're young, one of the advice I got early on is if you want to get paid really well, just be able to speak in front of a crowd, because there's hundreds of people that can do anything particularly well, but people that can talk about it well usually rise to the top of that particular group. And so I'm kind of on automatic, but it's, I don't know, I guess I find it weirdly satisfying when I teach a class and there's no questions, or more often than not, there's a question, but it's on the next slide. And it's like, okay, no, I've got this down, because, you know, I see the train of thought and I've been through this, down this road a few times, and I know where they're going, and I've got everything laid out for them, which is really nice.
You mean the classic quote unquote, there's a slide for that.
Yeah.
I feel like I've said that about thousands of times. I love it.
I love getting questions, and it's one of my favorite things. I could just do a whole thing on Q&A. But in another term, I don't like questions if it's something that I should have been addressing to help people out. It's a failure on my part if somebody says, well, what about this? And it's like, well, yeah, everybody in the class goes, yeah, we want to know about that. You know, that should be a part of the class. It's essentially a story. And so this is where photojournalism, you're telling the story of photography, and you need to be able to relate one subject to the next subject that leads to the next one, leads to the next one. And people should get to the end of it going, okay, that was a logical beginning to end story, even if it's an education story.
What is the thing that excites you the most about guiding people out on tours all over the world and seeing them in the field?
Well, this is something that Art Wolf was really excited about, taking the crew to new places. And then I have subsequently taken other people to these new places. And it's that excitement that a photographer gets when they get to a new, as I like to call it, target-rich environment, where there's just like so many things. You're like, you're overwhelmed at the moment of like, I don't know which lens I need because there are so many things here I want to shoot. And watching people take that in and then try to deal with it photographically, I think that's a fun thing. And being able to, I think it's just so much fun. You get back on the bus after a great day of shooting. It's like, did you see that? Oh, that was incredible. Did you see that one little kid? Oh, did you see this person over there? And, you know, you just can't stop talking about what's going on. And I don't know, it's like a bunch of high school kids that just got back after a dance and they're taking the bus home. And it's like, did you see them? Did you see them? Oh my God, that was so incredible. And it's fun having that excitement, because in our day-to-day life, how often do you get really excited? And this is where photographers do get very animated, especially me.
Where have you not been in the world that you want to be?
Oh, we've got a list on the whiteboard back in the office, and, you know, the Galapagos Islands and India, and there's various other places in Africa I'd like to go. And it's not all extreme places. I'd like to go to Italy as well. But I think it is a little bit more fun going to those harder to get places. I'd love to do a Kilimanjaro trek to the top. I'd love to go to base camp on Mount Everest. I'd love to go down to Patagonia. And then the big one is, I've done it a couple times, but you'd never turn it down again, is going down to Antarctica and South Georgia. I'd love to fill up a tour boat with people and go down there and do photography and history lectures. Not that I would teach history there, there'd be other people that do that, and do lectures. One of my favorite things was going down to Antarctica. There's 3 days at sea, there's nothing to do, but there's all these fantastic speakers who talk and give you these history lessons and biology lessons and photography lessons, and it's a great bonding experience, and it's just a great travel experience. And so I want to find as many of these as I can and incorporate them into tours that I do over the next 10 to 20 years.
What does it feel like to be, I've never been to Antarctica, what does it feel like to be amongst all of those penguins?
It reminds me of, I call it the Walt Disney World, because, you know, Walt Disney wildlife is where, you know, the little bird lands on top of the deer's head and it rubs up against the bear next to it. And the mountain lion over there is purring. And it's like, that's not wildlife. I went to Glacier National Park with a friend of mine and we hiked for like 100 miles and did not see one animal other than a couple of small birds. We never saw any bears. We never saw any moose. It's like, where are all the wild animals? And they just don't hang out the way they do in Walt Disney World. Well, down in South Georgia, they do. I mean, you have all these animals that are all really close proximity. They generally get along, and it's just an amazing sight, and it's just surreal. It's just like, it's a cartoon world.
I can totally see that and feel that, and I can't wait to go. I want to go.
Yeah, it'll be great.
All right, one final question for you, John. What advice do you have for photographers out there to continue to seek joy in their photography as their hobby in life?
Right. Well, if photography is your hobby, you're already a step in the right direction, I think, because photography as a business is a whole other thing, and I've not taught any business of photography classes. I teach it more as it's a lifestyle. It's a fun way to experience life. And I think for most people, it comes down to projects. And they can be big, small projects or small projects. Some people might, work with their kids' school and say, hey, I'm going to photograph the wrestling team this year. Can I come to the meets and photograph, the kids and give you all the photos or something? Or it might be your local park that you want to see cleaned up and you want to document it. And for political reasons, you're going to show it to your city council and say, it's not being taken care of. Here's visually what's wrong. Here's how it needs to be kept up. And so there's a lot of things that you can do. And find a project that works for you. Find a project that's doable or scalable or something that you can build upon. And just work on it in bits by bit, and think of it as a long-term project. No major pressure to finish it, but what can you do today or this week to get you a little bit further down the road?
John, where can everybody follow you, make sure that they're up with the latest and greatest of everything John Gringo?
Well, the easiest place to connect up with me is my website, which is johngringo.com, J-O-H-N-G-R-E-E-N-G-O. And so I've got everything linked there, but I am also on Instagram. I'm also on Facebook. And you can find me typing in John Gringo, although I think one of them has an underscore. And so, yeah, my website is probably the most central place for people to go to.
On behalf of photographers all over the world, literally in every country all over the world that have learned photography from you, thank you. And thank you for joining us on the podcast as well and sharing your stories.
No, it's great to have been here, and it's great to have helped as many people as I hope have learned from my classes.
I'm Kenna Klosterman, and you've been listening to the We Are Photographers podcast from Creative Live. At Creative Live, we believe there's a creator and a photographer in all of us. And yes, that means you. If you're looking to get fresh perspectives, inspiration, or skills to boost your hobbies, business, or life, we've got a class or two, or thousands, for you to check out. Just head over to www.creativelive.com. And in fact, John Gringo has over 70, you heard me right, over 70 classes available on Creative Live. If you're brand new to Creative Live, welcome to our global community of over 10 million strong. We have a special gift just for you. Use the code WEAREPHOTOGRAPHERS at checkout and get $10 off your very first purchase. The code is WEAREPHOTOGRAPHERS, all one word, no spaces. And if you haven't already, subscribe, rate, and review We Are Photographers wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. We would love to hear from you. So thank you again to John Gringo. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you all next week.